Welcome to the Government IT Podcast from Converge One Government Solutions, featuring expert discussions around cloud solutions, cybersecurity, modern workplace, enterprise networking, and customer experience for government and civil agencies. And now, here are your hosts, Ryan Heath and Julian Foster.
Ryan, thanks for joining me today. And I want to welcome everybody to the first of a three-part series that we're going to do on the new White House National Cybersecurity document that was released in March. There are a number of pillars, as they're called, in the document. And I think, so in this episode, we're going to cover pillars one and two. One is defend the American people, homeland, and way of life. And pillar number two is promote American prosperity. So I have a couple of questions right out of the gate. The first one is, before we dive into some of the content of the document itself, what exactly gave, was there something that, besides the obvious, concerns these days about cybersecurity and, digital attacks and things like that, was there something in particular that gave rise to this document being released when it was released?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the $1 billion that they're putting into a fund for cybersecurity strategies for local and state government. And then also just kind of creating a framework that, all federal agencies can use as kind of the default to build upon.
Yeah, that's understandable. So can you give us a quick overview of the document and what the contents are, what the purpose is?
Yeah. So the, cybersecurity strategy that they put together, has the approach at securing the national digital infrastructure, and kind of responding to the cyber threats that are kind of in focus on the main objectives that they put the pillars to, which all four of them: defend, promote, preserve, and expand.
Okay. Thanks for the overview. So let's dive into the first pillar: defend the American people, homeland, and way of life. What does that entail exactly?
Well, yeah. So, that's kind of set up to really kind of safeguard the digital, ecosystem that we have in place. It kind of involves the federal networks. So you can see a lot of, push for FedRAMP and then, mudging all of the DOD side of the house, which, was really kind of the military deployment guide. So it puts all the security restrictions in place as the default. And then there's the critical infrastructure that we have. So that's everything from especially on the DOE side. So power plants, nuclear power plants, especially, things of that nature, so really it's trying to create a solid foundation so we can support the American public. It kind of enhances, the current cybersecurity practices that are in play, as well as kind of empowering the American people with the tools to prevent, issues themselves. Okay. So a lot of education will be coming your way as well.
Right. So that'll be interesting to get into. That last part really piques my interest. The empowering the American people with tools. We can get into that later. Why don't we cover before that, how does the strategic plan, we'll sort of work from the top down. How does the strategic plan enhance federal government security?
Yeah, so it kind of focuses on centralizing a lot of the standards. Mm-hmm. So once we have those standards centralized, then it's a lot easier to start building upon. So every agency has a certain method that they're going to go produce their cybersecurity efforts, put things in place that are going to be the baseline. And then that really kind of improves, if there is an incident, how do we detect it? How do we respond? And kind of increasing the accountability of all the different agencies. There is a big emphasis really on zero trust architecture. So being able to adopt that, especially on the cloud services side, between, FedRAMP and then modernizing the legacy systems that really need to be put in place. It's kind of a cohesive, umbrella of cybersecurity structure that, really needs to be across the board in all agencies.
So that's really interesting. As I would expect, there are a lot of subjects that sort of cross over between our conversations, between the different episodes that we're doing. And we've been talking a lot about modernizing legacy systems. We just did the webinar with Sienna on TDM migrations. I believe it was when we were discussing Wi-Fi 6E, we talked about zero trust. And I was curious then and failed to ask, could you tell us a little bit more about that and what that means exactly?
Well, yeah. So the zero trust, architecture is really about, never trusting and always verifying. So if you take that inside your organization as well as outside your organization, so you can't really trust anybody inside. You have to authenticate the devices. And, there's some key components, to that. So on the identify and verification side, you have to authenticate to the network. If it's remote user, if it's even internal access control, et cetera, it always has to be authenticated. Then there's the least privilege concept. So you're only granted the minimum amount of access that's really required for that, profile or even that individual user. And then micro segmentation is kind of the same. It isolates you to a certain portion of the network, you know, or a certain portion of the cloud. You know, you can also kind of look at that just on your AD scheme, how you don't have everybody as an admin to get privilege for everything. You just have your certain applications that you're assigned mm-hmm. to, and that's what your access is allowed. Continuous monitoring, which is always something that's, you know, really good to do, especially in the real-time monitoring aspect of it. And then security integration. So you can get, you know, MFA, things of that nature, firewalls, intrusion detection, et cetera, encryption. All those would be kind of integrated into that security integration piece.
Okay, that makes sense. So correct me if I'm wrong, but kind of visual that I'm getting in my mind as you discuss, as you describe that, is it just almost sounds like there's like a multi-perimeter access or many, many layers of intrusion prevention that occurs correct. in zero yep. trust.
Yeah, because what you really want to do is isolate. If there is an issue, cybersecurity related issue, you want to isolate mm-hmm. that from the network and everything else.
Okay, that makes sense. So moving on to critical infrastructure then, what are some of the key elements in securing the infrastructure against cyber threats? This is such a huge concern these days.
Well, there's a lot, the strategy kind of outlines the approach of, you know, from the government standpoint and the private sector to really work together, which I think is very important. So there was just a release I saw on the Juniper side that they were working with the DoD on the SD-WAN portion, and that was a joint exercise. So it kind of goes through the requirements, making sure that all the security pieces and layers are there and verified so that they can work in, you know, their operating initiatives. And that even goes, you know, to the battlefield and how that works. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really kind of taking that whole exercise and proving that the security restrictions are in place and appropriate for the DoD piece to actually do their job correctly.
Right.
And, you know, it's really critical, especially on the, that I'm seeing just on the critical assets that we have, that the things we've been talking about, Ciena, Juniper, you can kind of name that, that all those things do get kind of updated. There's a lot of legacy systems out there that are kind of high targets that need to be protected. Mm,
which gets us back to, right, you know, updating, modernizing the older infrastructure and TDM migrations, as we've been talking about a lot.
Correct.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so now then we get into the nitty gritty, you know, where the rubber hits the road, so to speak. How does this strategy aim to empower the American people specifically in terms of protecting themselves online and our contribution to national security?
Well, it's, you know, I kind of see it as the strategy almost from the ground up, kind of raising the public awareness of the different threats that we have, educating them on the threats, you know, best practices for online safety. So using an individual, you know, I'm seeing it from that standpoint of kind of, you know, how to protect, you know, my grandma. Mm-hmm. You know, what can she do online? How does she need to be educated so she's not clicking on the wrong
right.
thing to kind of open up a can of worms on the security side that, you know, if she just kind of did things correctly, it would be nice and easy
right.
for her. So that's part of the strategy, and as well as kind of expanding on the education, the workforce. You know, as an example, as a, you know, government contractor, we have to go through ISO certifications and CMMC certifications. So we're going through all of those processes right now, which really reinforce the education internally mm-hmm. to our organization, externally, and then verifies, you know, that we do have the correct, you know, cybersecurity practices in place.
Right. Yeah, I think education is absolutely crucial. Certainly, I think we can both attest from our experience that it does not matter how secure a system is if the users don't know how to use the security features properly, right? No sharing passwords, right. No using weak passwords, you know, using the same password over and over, just some of the basic things that would make make security systems so much more effective are the very reasons why they don't succeed. And so it's not so much the security system that's a problem, but the way it's being used. So I can see that as being a pretty significant challenge, really, getting everyone onboarded and educated properly.
You know, and especially with all the IoT devices mm-hmm. that are now put in play, that are attaching to the network, default passwords being left on, which gives you access into a system, mm-hmm. you know, things like that need to be addressed and be really kind of upfront on any deployment.
Right. So moving on to pillar two, promoting American mm-hmm. prosperity. Can you give us an overview of this pillar and exactly how that plays into the overall strategy?
Yeah, this is really kind of, you know, fostering the innovation that we have as, you know, America, you know, securing the digital economy, protecting our banking system, kind of ensuring the leadership in the cyberspace arena, you know, is there and that we're trusted, you know, investing in the research, the development, especially securing the digital, you know, supply chain. So kind of promoting the trustworthiness of having our open internet, you know, without being completely restricted like some of our other nations.
Right. And so what kind of investments does the strategy propose in order to maintain American leadership in cybersecurity research and development?
So, increase in investment on the cybersecurity R&D side, both in the government and public sector, especially with our partnerships, kind of includes the advanced technologies, things like AI, quantum computing, secure hardware. So, seeing a lot of AI stuff pop up now. So I'm really kind of curious to see what the government's going to do to, protect us, educate us around that, because it is something kind of new and now everybody's got access to it. A couple months ago, nobody really had access. It was more of application-based. So things would happen in the background and individuals wouldn't know, but now you have the control of it.
Yeah.
So, what kind of controls and education can be around that? Secure hardware, making hardware in country, all the chips in country, so they can't come from overseas where you can be compromised that way. So that's why you have a lot of TAA requirements, across the government as well.
So with the rise of concerns over digital threats, which are, totally understandable considering that everything is going digital at this point in time, can you tell us more about how the strategy aims to secure the digital economy specifically?
So it kind of, promotes the cooperation between government, private sector, to kind of mitigate the risk associated with the complexity that we haven't put in place, the global interconnectivity. So even if you think about that piece, we have agencies that, have offices all across the world. So there has to be some type of interconnect to connect those offices together. Putting that partnership in place, the global supply chain is very important to protect, just kind of develop more secure, resilient, trustworthy networks to support the supply chains are very important right now. So kind of working close with the allies, and our private and public partners.
I moved to Brooklyn in 2001 and I was here for, the blackout that we had where just all the power in New York City went down for about a day and a half. And I was totally caught off guard. I had no cash, right? And so basically, fortunately I lived in a neighborhood long enough that I was able to sort of borrow things from the bodega, right? Until the ATMs were back online and then you pay your tab. But, I can see that there's, a lot of reason for, it's understandable. There's a lot of cause for concern over the digital economy in terms of, currency. When was the last time a lot of us actually had money in our pocket? Because we're all using our phones and cards to pay for everything at this point in time. Is there any anything included in the strategy, or is this part of the coverage for digital economy that would allay some of those concerns?
It's a big part of that, especially when we're talking about the power network and the grid protecting that. That's very, very high in the list of things that they're going to be able to start really focusing in on to protecting, because if you look at what happened to other countries when there was an invasion, there was definitely attacks on the power grids. To cripple a city is pretty easy to do if you take out all the power.
Right.
I went through the kind of same experience you did in Southern California when San Diego went out. If you didn't have cash, you couldn't go to the store. You were kind of lost. Right. So you were just sitting there waiting, hopefully tomorrow I'll have power and I can go back to the ATM or be able to, feed my family.
Yeah, it's an interesting transition that we're experiencing. The all the great benefits that come with things going digital and the conveniences also bring some of these vulnerabilities that I think is a large part of what this document is looking to address. How does the strategy plan to promote trustworthiness and an open internet, which is also a pretty big concern these days?
It is. And it really kind of emphasizes the importance of working with our international partners, kind of uphold that vision of an open internet, free, global, reliable, secure internet. A lot of those words are, when you put those together in a sentence, it's hard to do.
Right.
Especially when you want to secure it and have it open. What are those guidelines that you have to put in place? Really kind of promoting the responsibility to have a behavior that's good in the cyberspace arena is important. To be accountable, collaborate with other nations, to really kind of, to put something meaningful in place, to augment kind of the malicious cyber attacks. And that's a big concern across the US and all of our allies. Malicious cyber attack from outside, be crippling.
And understandably so. Again, with everything going digital these days, that's where all of our vulnerabilities are going to lie. So it's really important that we bring in as much security on that front as we possibly can. So I think that's probably a good place for us to pause for today. We're going to do this as a three-part series, like we said earlier. In the next episode, we'll cover Pillar 3 and Pillar 4. So make sure to stay tuned for that. And everybody check the comments for our subscription links. Also hit the notification bell icon so that you're notified when these episodes come out. So yeah, let's quickly recap what we covered today. So we talked about the importance of creating a more resilient and defensible digital ecosystem, how the strategy plans to achieve that by investing in cybersecurity research and development, securing the digital economy, and promoting a trustworthy and open internet. Do you have anything that you want to add in closing?
I just kind of want to go back to kind of focusing in on how crucial it is for the U.S. to kind of work closely with the private sector and the international partners to strengthen the cybersecurity posture that we have and, you know, to be able to protect the digital ecosystem. It's key to put this, you know, in play.
Absolutely. So it's a very important document for us to cover. I think it's a great idea that we're doing this on the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and leave some comments. Let us know what you think about this. Let's start a conversation about it. And it'd be great to engage with everyone and really have an open discussion about thoughts and ideas on the subject. So until next time, stay safe and informed. And thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thanks, Ryan, for your time today.
Appreciate it.
Great. See you guys soon. Thanks. We'll